I'm not pulling out of my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the Drive to Work, Coronavirus Edition. Okay, so today I'm going to talk about what was my favorite set before I came to work for Wizards. So I'm going to talk about Antiquities. Okay, so Antiquities came out in March 4th of 1994. So what happened was Wizards of the Coast makes enough product for Magic, thinking it'll last for quite a while. It doesn't. They put Alpha out, it sells right away. They put Beta out, it sells right away. They put Unlimited out, it sells right away. So they knew they needed to get some other Magic sets out there. So Richard went off and made Arabian Nights, and they went to the team that was making Ice Age, what we now know as the East Coast Playtesters, so Scaff Elias, Jim Lynn, Dave Petty, and Chris Page, and said to them, hey, we need a set. And so they quickly made a small set. So the card, there's 85 unique cards in Antiquities, but all the basic lands have multiple pieces of art. So most people think of it as being a 100 card set in that if you want to collect all the different pieces of art. There were 28 commons, 37 uncommons, 20 rares. It has an expansion symbol of an anvil. So Arabian Nights was the first kind of top-down set. Richard said, oh, I'm going to make a theme set based on the Arabian Nights. Antiquities was the first sort of mechanically themed set. What the East Coast Playtesters did is they said, we're going to make a set about artifacts. And every single card in the set, minus the lands, so everything that's not a land, has the word artifact either on its type line or it talks about artifacts in its rules text. So the word artifact appears somewhere on the card. There are the lands that all tap for colorless that obviously are meant to play artifacts, but not all of them, although some of them do reference artifacts, but not all of them reference artifacts. But those are the only cards in the whole set that literally don't have the word artifact on the set, on the card. And that's just one or two of the lands. Anyway, what happened was this set came out. It came out in 8-card boosters. If you bought a box, there were 68-card boosters in it. Early Magic had a lot of printing problems. The printing problem that went on with this set was that they had messed up the collation, and it was possible to get reprints of the same card in the same booster pack. And so they did a buyback where you could send in stuff if you got duplication, and they send you cards you didn't have. The other really big thing about the set that was something new and different was this is the first set that had a story. Arabian Nights was based on a story, but it wasn't a Magic story. It was just based on an existing collection of stories. And Alpha definitely teased characters and things. There were proper names and stuff. But, so what they did is they said, okay, we're going to tell a story. But they did it in a very clever way because they're like, okay, a trading card, you don't know the order you see things. So what if the story took place many years ago and you are digging up antiquities of the past that are giving hints of things that happen. And so the idea was, it was an event called the Brothers War. So Urza and Mishra, who are brothers, end up getting in a very, very long war that takes over many years of fighting each other. They originally find Power Stones, and there's the Might Stone and the Weak Stone. And anyway, the Brothers War lasts for a long time, and there's a lot of artifact creatures that are fighting this war, and you in the present are digging up remnants of that war. So anyway, from the very beginning of the game, I always liked artifacts. I was a huge fan. The idea that there was a set focused on artifacts was really, really cool to me. So I was quite excited by it. And the hint of the story I thought was fascinating. I really liked what it was doing. And it's the first set that really... this is the set that first mentions the Phyrexians for the first time. This is the set... I mean, Urza and Mishra had shown up in name in Alpha, as did Ashnod. But really, this is the story that said, okay, we're going to take some of those proper names and really explain who these people are. So maybe you had, you had owned Urza's glasses or something, but who was Urza? And all of a sudden, you're learning who Urza was, who Mishra was, and such. Okay, so what I'm going to do is go through the set. I'm going to talk about different cards. I'm going to go in what would be collector number order, although I don't think there weren't collector numbers at the time, but how we now order them. So we're going to start with Argivian Archaeologists. So, one white for 1/1, white, and tap. You bring an artifact from your graveyard to your hand. Now, I loved her giving archaeologists. This, I believe, was the first card. There was, in Alpha, there was regrowth, which lets you get back anything. But this was a creature. This wasn't a spell that got back stuff. This was a creature and a reusable creature. And so I made a lot of artifact decks based on this set. And the archaeologist showed up in a lot of them because it allowed me to get back things. And I thought it was quite cool. Next, we have our Givian Archaeologist. 1WW 2/2. You tap it to prevent 2 damage to target artifact creature. So Scaff and company did in this set was they took things that Alpha had done and found ways to sort of connect them to artifacts. For example, there was a card called Samite Healer in Alpha that you could tap it to prevent 1 damage to any target. And our Givian Blacksmith was like, well, I'm like that, except I can't tap for anything. I can only tap to prevent artifact, 2 damage to artifact creatures, but I can do more than Samite Healer prevented 1 damage, this prevented 2 damage. Ended up being kind of narrow. I don't think this card saw lots of play. Okay, next up, we have Artifact Ward and Circle Protection Artifacts. So Artifact Ward costs 1 white mana. It's an enchant creature. And then the creature has basically protection from artifacts. Technically, when it was printed, it sort of wrote things out. Let's see, okay, so it doesn't technically have protection. Enchanted creature can't be blocked by artifact creatures. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to enchanted creatures by artifact sources. An enchant creature can't be a target of abilities from artifact sources. This card should have been protection from artifacts. The ward that it is copying gives protection. Maybe they thought they couldn't do protection from artifacts at the time. But anyway, you'll notice this in Circle Protection is they took cycles that were 5-card cycles from Alpha, although COP Black didn't show up to beta, but they took cycles from alpha beta, and then they made the artifact version. So it's a protection artifact, 1 and a white, you spend 2 mana rather than 1, and you prevent all damage from an artifact source. So this is them sort of like taking cycles and then just saying, okay, well, this protects you from colors, well, this protects you from artifacts. Okay, next up, Dampening Field. So Dampening Field is 2 and a white, players can't untap more than 1 artifact during their untap step. I'm reading the Oracle text, by the way. When I find fun text that's the original text, I'll read it. But so anyway, this card, there was a card in Alpha. There was 2 cards. One was called Smoke, and one was called Winter Orb. So Winter Orb only lets you untap 1 land per turn, and Smoke only lets you untap 1 creature per turn. Well, Dampening Field was the artifact version of that. Martyrs of Corliss, 3WW, 1/6. As long as Martyrs of Corliss is untapped, all damage dealt to you by artifacts is dealt to Martyrs of Corliss instead. Yeah, there's a card in Alpha. A lot of these, you see a lot of this early on. This set was made pretty quickly, so there's a lot of riffs going on. Like, oh, here's something Magic did, but now we're going to do the artifact version of this. What was it called? Personal Incarnation. This is kind of an artifact version of Personal Incarnation, which was an Alpha. Reverse Polarity. 1WW. You gain X life, where X is twice the damage dealt to you so far by this turn by artifacts. So this is another thing. The set had a lot of helping artifacts and then protecting you from artifacts. I think this set was a little bit too strong in protecting you from artifacts. This set kind of, nowadays when we make sets, we definitely put answers to the set in the set, but this set is a little stronger than that in trying to find the answers. Now, that's all the white cards, by the way. There's only 7 of each of the colors in the set. Most of the set is actually artifacts because it's an artifact theme set. So now we get on to blue. So Drafna's Restoration, put any number of target artifact cards from target player's graveyard on top of their library in any order. So this allowed you to sort of get back your artifacts, but you didn't draw them. You put it on top of your library. There were some decks that used it, but it was a little clunky. Energy Flux, enchantment, 2 and a blue. All artifacts have, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice this artifact unless you pay 2 mana. Was this the first? There were some other cards that made you tax things. So this might be the first thing. There's a card in Legends that's a land that taxes creatures, but this is before Legends. So this might be the first taxing card that made you tax to keep things. I don't think this is copying. I think this was doing something that had been done before. Okay, Hercule's Recall. Return all artifacts target player owns to their hand. This card saw a lot of play because early Magic, with the Moxes and Lotus, and there are a lot of artifacts out there. And there's a lot of mana, Soul Rings, and the Hercule's Recall became saw a lot of play in early Magic. Power Artifact. Blue, Enchantment Aura. Enchanted Artifact's abilities cost 2 less to activate. The effect can't reduce the mana in that cost to less than 1 mana. So there's a bunch of stuff like this where this, you can put it on a singular thing to make mana cheaper. We don't do a lot. We do that a little bit, but not as much anymore. Reconstruction. So the next one's Reconstruction. It's a sorcery. Costs a blue mana. Return target artifact card from your graveyard to your hand. So this was kind of, in Alpha, there was Raise Dead, which was a single black mana, get an artifact back. Get a creature back. So this was just mirroring that, in blue, though, because blue was, you'll notice here that a lot of blue cards are getting back artifacts from your graveyard. They're bouncing them back to your hand, returning from graveyard to top of library. This one gets them back to your hand. Reconstruction is interesting because there was a misprint here. Reconstruction forgot to put on the expansion symbol. So this is the first card that was from an expansion that didn't have an expansion symbol. And a little funny story is 1994 U.S. Nationals, at the last minute, they announced that you weren't allowed to play any card that had an expansion symbol on it, which meant basically you could only play cards from the core set and not cards from expansions. But Reconstruction was playable because it didn't have an expansion symbol. So in U.S. Nationals 1994, the only card from an expansion that was playable in the format was Reconstruction. Next, Sage of Latinum. So this card actually just got reprinted in Dominaria. So Sage of Latinum is 1 and a blue. It's a 1/2 creature, human artificer. Although it was a sage at the time it was printed. Tap, sacrifice an artifact, draw a card. So it allows you to turn artifacts into card drawing. And it's actually kind of balanced. Like I said, we've reprinted it. We reprinted it in Dominaria because it was safe to reprint. And the final, this was one of my favorite cards in the whole set. Transmute Artifact. Blue, sorcery. Sacrifice an artifact. If you do, search your library for an artifact card. If that card's converted mana cost is less than or equal to the sacrificed artifact's converted mana cost, put it onto the battlefield. If it's greater, you may pay X where X is the difference. If you do, put it on the battlefield. If you don't, put it into its owner's graveyard, then shuffle your library. So what this lets you do is turn an artifact on the battlefield into an artifact from your library. You had to pay extra mana if the thing you're getting was bigger. Interestingly, I had so many. I loved this card. I made the card Tinker in Urza's Saga because I was trying to make a cleaned up version of Transmute Artifact and ended up making what R&D has claimed to me the most broken card I ever designed, which was Tinker. But anyway, Tinker was me trying to do a cleaned up version of Transmute Artifact. I kind of took away the things that kept it in balance, like the paying extra mana. This was one of my favorite cards. My favorite white card was Argivian Archaeologist. My favorite blue card was by far Transmute Artifact. Okay, now we get into black. Artifact Possession. So 2 and a black, enchant artifact. Whenever enchanted artifact becomes tapped or a player activates an ability of an enchanted artifact without tapping its activation cost, Artifact Possession deals 2 damage to that artifact's controller. So there was a card called Wanderlust in Alpha. There are a bunch of cards that kind of punish you for having a creature or a land or particular things. This was kind of the equivalent for artifacts. It also does damage when you activate it, so it becomes tapped or becomes activated. So it's a little different. Wanderlust just punishes you every turn no matter what. Okay, Gate of Phyrexia, one of the big breaks of all time. Black enchantment. Sacrifice a creature. Destroy a target artifact. Activate this ability only during your upkeep and only once per turn. I think this is the only black card that destroys artifacts. Early Magic definitely had the philosophy of, well, yeah, black's not supposed to be good at this, so we'll just make it really weak. And this card is weak, but it's now our belief is, look, don't let cards do things they're not supposed to do. Even doing it weak, if the deck really needs it. Like, this card sees play in Commander, I know, because if you're playing a black deck and you really need to get rid of artifacts, this is your only choice. Which is the problem with making weak versions of things is, if the goal is you're not supposed to do it, even weak things are doable. I think this is there's a few other cards to do it, but this is introducing Phyrexia. This is one of a few cards that makes mention of Phyrexia. There's flavor text about Phyrexia. So this is the introduction of the Phyrexians for the very first time, which is, in fact, is Magic's oldest villain. In Legends, we meet Nicol Bolas. So a set later, you meet Nicol Bolas. So they both are from the first year of Magic, basically. I mean, it came out in 94. But if you thought, both of them came out before a year of Magic had gone by. Okay, next, Haunting Wind. So enchantment, 3 and a black. Whenever an artifact becomes tapped or a player activates an artifact's ability without tapping its activation cost, Haunting Wind deals 1 damage to that artifact's controller. So it's sort of weird. Haunting Wind and Artifact Possession are kind of the same thing, except Artifact Possession goes on a particular artifact and only punishes that artifact, where Haunting Wind affects all artifacts. Now, I think it affects everybody, not just yours, but everybody's. So this is meant a little bit more as a sideboard card. Ah, Phyrexian Gremlins. Okay, so Phyrexian Gremlins. I think this card was a gremlin when it first came out, then became, I think, an Oofy for a while, and then when Gremlins came back in Kaladesh, it went back to being a gremlin. So 2 and a black, it's a gremlin creature. 1/1, you may choose not to untap Phyrexian Gremlins during your untap step. Tap target artifact. It doesn't untap during its controller's untap step for as long as Phyrexian Gremlins remain tapped. So there's a series of cards we did for a while early on where you would sort of lock things down, and then as long as this creature stayed tapped, that stayed tapped. Why this is an artifact, I mean, why this isn't black. Black kind of locking down artifacts isn't really black. As you can see, there's a lot of, the color pie at the time was, like, a lot of it hadn't been figured out yet. So, I mean, it's not really a knock against the East Coast playtesters. Like, the color pie hadn't really resolved some of this. So they sort of did some things. And after the fact, like, oh, okay, let's clean this up a little bit. Okay, next, Priest of Yawgmoth. So 1 and a black for a 1/2 human cleric. Tap, sacrifice an artifact, add an amount of black mana equal to the sacrificed artifact's converted mana cost. There's a card in Alpha called Sacrifice, where you sacrifice creatures to get black mana. This was that put on a creature and for artifacts. Xenic Poltergeist. This is my favorite of the black cards. Xenic Poltergeist, 1 black. It's a 1/1 spirit. It was summoned Poltergeist originally, but later becoming a spirit. Tap, until your next turn, target non-creature artifact becomes an artifact creature with power and toughness, each equal to converted mana cost. So it animated your artifacts, your non-creature artifacts, which is really cool. I had a lot of fun decks with this card. Once again, why is this black? It's kind of weird in black, but because there was not a lot of definition of what did artifacts, a lot of stuff in Antiquities, looking back, I mean, with now it more cleaned and figured out, it does a lot of stuff that we don't let it do anymore. But anyway, this was a pretty cool card. It's my favorite of the black cards. And finally, Yawgmoth Demon, in black, that is. 4 black, Demon, it's a creature, 6/6. It's got Flying, First Strike. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may sacrifice an artifact. If you don't, tap Yawgmoth Demon and it deals 2 damage to you. So Yawgmoth Demon, there's a card called Lord of the Pit in Alpha, where you sacrifice creatures or it attacks you. This was them doing their version of Lord of the Pit, except this thing likes to eat artifacts. Because Yawgmoth Demon, this is one of the Phyrexians. Yawgmoth was of the Phyrexians, so this is one of the Phyrexians. Okay, now we get into red. Artifact Blast. Red, instant, counter-target artifact spell. Again, there's a lot of color pie violations in Antiquities. Red is allowed to destroy artifacts. It is not allowed to counter artifacts. Now, obviously, this card does do it, but it is not something that red is supposed to do. Red is supposed to be good at destroying them once they're there. But there's a lot of, because they made a set all about artifacts, they really stretch things. And once again, it wasn't like it was established what could or couldn't do something. So, next, Atog. This is clearly my favorite red card, and one of my favorite cards in the set. The funny thing at the time was Atog. So Atog is 1 and a red, 1/2, 8 creature Atog. Sacrifice an artifact. Atog gets +2/+2 until end of turn. There was a lot of belief when this first set first came out that Atog was a bad, bad card. And I made a lot of decks to demonstrate to my friends that Atog was not a bad card, but in fact, a pretty good card. And I made a lot of Atog decks. It is. Atog was my favorite creature up until Morrow became my favorite. Atog was my favorite creature for a long time in Magic, or at least in early Magic. Not a long time, but in early Magic. So Atog, by the way, is anagram of goat, and the idea is because it eats anything. I would go on later, my love of Atogs, I would make a mega cycle of Atogs, meaning I made Atog in every color. Because we were on Mirage, we were working on like Foratog, and I realized it was an Atog in green. And then after Foratog, we made Necrotog, and then we made Chronotog, and then we made Oratog. And then in Odyssey, I made multicolor versions of the Atog. I made allied colors of the Atogs. Anyway, I love Atogs, so big Atog fan. Next, Detonate, X and Red, Sorcery. Destroy target artifact with quota mana cost X. It can't be regenerated. Detonate deals X damage to that artifact's controller. So the idea is not only do you blow something up, but it also deals damage to them. But it has X in it. Red is supposed to destroy artifacts, so that was a pretty good red thing. Dwarven Weaponsmith, one in red. Dwarf, originally it was just summon dwarves, even though only one dwarf was pictured. Is now a dwarf artificer, 1/1. Tap, sacrifice an artifact, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. Activate this ability only during your upkeep. It's interesting. There's a lot more restrictions of when you can do things. There's a lot more worry that if you just do it any time, it would cause problems. Nowadays, we're a little more willing to, like, this probably wouldn't be during your upkeep anymore. Goblin Artisans. Red, 1/1, Goblin Artisans. Goblin Artificer. Originally, we just summoned goblins. Tap, flip a coin. If you win the flip, draw a card. If you lose the flip, counter target artifact spell you control that isn't the target of an ability from another creature named Goblin Artisans. Let me read that again. If you lose the flip, counter target artifact spell you control that isn't the target of an ability from another creature named Goblin Artifact. Okay, that is a confusing sentence. So basically, counter target artifact spell you control that. I'm not even sure I understand what this card is doing. This is a confusing card. I see. You are only able to cast this spell as you cast an artifact. And then you can flip a coin. And if you win, you get to draw a card. But if you lose, the artifact gets countered. It's a weird card in red. The flavor of the goblins sometimes destroy things. Orcish Mechanics, 2R, 1/1, orc. Tap, sacrifice an artifact. It deals 2 damage to any target. There were orcs. They're orcish artillery. Orcish artillery didn't sacrifice things, but they did do damage. And then Shatterstorm, 2 red, destroy all artifacts that can't be regenerated. Some reason early on in Magic, we were scared to death of regeneration. Everything stopped regeneration. And so you see it here, like, now we just destroy it. For a while, by the way, we had, not when Antiquities came up, but destroy can't be regenerated, started to be called Bury for a while because we did it so much. The reason we don't do Bury anymore is we don't have regeneration. We don't hose regeneration. Okay, those are the red cards. So now we get into the green cards. Okay, Argothian Pixies. I love Argothian Pixies. So Argothian Pixies are 1 in a green, 2/1, creature fairy. They can't be blocked by artifact creatures. Prevent all damage that will be dealt to Argothian Pixies by artifact creatures. Once again, for some reason, they didn't get the idea they could do protection from artifacts, which is what this card wants. It doesn't have all of it, but it was trying to mimic protection from artifacts. Same with Argothian Treefolk. 3 green, 3/5. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to Argothian Treefolk by artifact sources. So both of those kind of want to be protection from artifacts. Pixies are my favorite of the ones that are here. I had a deck, a little weenie deck. And because the Misha's Factories were so much of a problem, Argothian Pixies were key to my deck digging through the Misha. I'll get to Misha's Factories. This is probably a 2-podcast thing just because I can see from my clock. I'm going to get through half the set, but I'm not going to get through all of the set. Okay, Sindel Druid, 1 in a green, 1/1, human druid, or the original was just a summoned druid. When an opponent casts an artifact spell, put a +1 counter on Sindel Druid. So, Richard had made a creature, that whenever a creature died, you got a +1/+1 counter, and so I think they were riffing off of that. Alpha did have things with +1/+1 counters, but, like, Fungusaur got a +1/+1 counter when you were damaged, so Alpha and Arabian Nights has sort of made a few cards that, like, when thing X happens, get a +1 counter. Because this is an artifact spell. Now note that it's not when anyone casts an artifact, it's only when the opponent casts an artifact. Nowadays, we tend to do things more of when you do it so you can build around it. Crumble. Crumble is an instant for green. Destroy target artifact. It can't be regenerated. That artifact's controller gains life equal to its converted mana cost. This was basically Swords for Plowshares, but for artifacts. In which I'm destroying it for 1 mana and giving you life. Obviously, has a camber generator because we did that everywhere. And Crumble was very, very good. It was a 1-mana answer. It was actually stronger than Shatter, which was a 2-mana answer. And artifacts were all over the place in early Magic. So Crumble saw a whole bunch of play. Gay as Avenger, one green, tree folk, one plus star. Although in the original card, it was star plus one. It was a tree folk. Originally, it was summoned Gay as Avenger, but now it's a tree folk. Gay as Avenger's power and toughness are each equal to one plus the number of artifacts your opponent controls. So once again, it's a star plus one, equal to, but based on the opponent, not yours. You can't build around this. You can sideboard it against your opponent's deck, or if your metagame has a lot of artifacts. Power Leech, green enchantment. Whenever an artifact an opponent controls becomes tapped or an opponent activates an ability, without tapped activates, you gain one life. So this is the mirror to Haunting Wind. So whenever they use an artifact, you gain a life rather than they lose a life. So it's the mirror. It's not creatively mirrored, but it's the mirror to that. And finally, Titania Song, which I think... Is Titania Song my favorite green card? Titania Song or Argothian Pixies. We'll call it a tie. I did love this card a lot. Titania Song, 300 green enchantment. Each non-creature artifact loses all abilities and becomes an artifact creature with power and toughness each equal to its converted mana cost. If Titania Song leaves the battlefield, its effect continues until end of play. So it animates all your artifacts. So Xenic Poltergeist animated it temporarily, and it just could do one creature. This did all of them. I made a whole bunch of animating artifact decks, so I did love Titania Song, and I did love Xenic Poltergeist. And Argothian Pixies was a key part of my deck, so I really enjoyed that. Okay, so now we get to the artifacts. So let me, I only needed a few, then I'll be halfway through, and then probably we'll wrap up for today. But I'll come back next time with my next podcast to talk about the rest of the cards. Amulet of Krug. I believe that this is referencing Urza's wife. Krug is where she is. She is from Krug. And anyway, 2 and tap, prevent the next 1 damage that will be dealt to any target this turn. So it was kind of like a Samite Healer, but Samite Healer was just tap, and this was 2 and tap, and man, just tap is so much better. This card was a pretty weak card. Armageddon Clock costs 6, it's an artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a Doom Counter on Armageddon Clock. At the beginning of your draw step, Armageddon Clock deals damage equal to the number of Doom Counters on it to each player. So basically, it just... And then 4: remove a Doom Counter from Armageddon Clock. Any player may activate this ability, but only during any upkeep step. So I think Richard had done a card in Arabian Nights that anybody could activate. This was a card, also a card that anybody could activate. The idea essentially is it just does more and more damage over time, except players have the ability to slow it down. So if you put it out and you want damage to happen, then maybe you're making your opponent waste mana to try to slow it down. Anyway... the very first t-shirts that Magic made were Vesuvian Doppelganger, Nightmare, and Armageddon Clock. There was a Hurling Minotaur made just for employees. But those were the first 3 shirts ever made with Magic. Armageddon Clock was one of them. It was a very odd choice. This wasn't a particularly popular card. The art by Amy Weber is a very cool piece of art, which is, I'm sure, why they chose it. But it was an odd choice just because, like... Vesuvian Doppelganger, Nightmare, a lot of people played. They were very popular cards. Armageddon Clock was not a very popular card. So it was definitely an odd choice. Okay, next, Ashnod's Altar. So Ashnod was Mishra's right-hand person. She was sort of his apprentice, I guess is probably a better term. So Ashnod's Altar, 3 artifact, sacrifice a creature, add 2 colorless mana. This card did see a bunch of play. Just because it converted creatures into mana. Colorless mana, but still. There's definitely some decks that played this, especially early on in Magic. Next, Ashnod's Battle Gear. Ashnod's Battle Gear, 2 artifact. You may choose not to untap Ashnod's Battle Gear during your untap step. 2 and tap, target creature you control gets +2/-2 for as long as Ashnod's Battle Gear remains tapped. So this is the early versions of equipment. This is kind of proto-equipment. Equipment didn't happen until Mirrodin. You'll notice, like, it's flavored as equipment. You can only use it on your creatures, and it has this kind of, I can keep it tapped, so I can put it on my creature and keep it on my creature, but I then can take it off and put it on another creature. So this is definitely early on. Ashnod's a little bit of a masochist, so the idea that her armor, like, makes you more powerful, but it also hurts you to wear it, so +2/-2. I thought that was pretty flavorful. Okay, next, Ashnod's Transmogrant. Ooh, I played this card a lot. 1 artifact, tap, sacrifice Ashnod's Transmogrant, put a +1/+1 counter on target non-artifact creature. That creature becomes an artifact in addition to its other types. So the cool thing with this card is not only did it make a +1/+1 counter, but it turned things into artifacts. And because there were a lot of artifact shenanigans that the set made, the ability to turn something into an artifact was pretty cool. And so I had a lot of decks that use this card as a means to include some non-artifacts so I could turn them into artifacts to care about them being artifacts. So this was definitely something I got a lot of use out of. Okay, I got three more cards, and then I think I'm halfway through, and then we will wrap up for today. Battering Ram. Battering Ram, it costs two. It's an artifact creature, a construct. Originally, artifact creatures didn't have creature types at this time, so it didn't have creature type originally. 1/1. At the beginning of combat in your turn, Battering Ram gains banding until end of combat. Whenever Battering Ram becomes blocked by a wall, destroy that wall at end of combat. So the idea was it had banding, but only on attack, and it destroyed walls, so it kind of don't block it with walls, because it was a Battering Ram. A very top-down design. Next, Bronze Tablet. Costs 6. Artifact. Remove Bronze Tablet from your deck if you're not playing for anti. Bronze Tablet enters the battlefield tapped. 4 and tap, exile Bronze Tablet and target non-token permanent an opponent owns. That player may pay 10 life. If they do, put Bronze Tablet into its owner's graveyard. Otherwise, that player owns Bronze Tablet and you own the other exiled card. Okay, so the idea here was if your opponent put something up. So anti, when Magic first came out, the way you would play, this was the default rules, although very, very few people played with anti early on. But the default rules was you drew 7 cards, your 8th card went aside, and the winner of the game got the loser's card, was how anti worked. This card lets you, if you get this card, you can trade your Bronze Tablet for your opponent's anti card, basically. And so even if you lost the game, you still could get their anti card. Anti did not last very long, and so this is early enough there's still anti cards in the set. The anti cards would... Anti was officially the way to play when Magic first came out. Almost nobody did it. It was very... I used to go to some anti nights where I had a friend that ran a shop, and they would do once a month anti nights, and we'd make special decks where you knew you were anting. But early Magic, you would sit down and go, we're not playing for anti, right? That was just kind of how you would start games when you would play against strangers. Okay, the last and final card, and then I'm halfway through the set, is Candelabra of Taunos. A very powerful card. 1 artifact, costs 1, it's an artifact. X tap, untap X target lands. There are lands in the set that I will get to in the next podcast, the Urza-tron, that can tap for more than 1 mana. So this card allowed you to basically go up way in mana. There were other reasons to untap lands. I'm not saying that the only reason to untap lands was mana, but one of the strengths of this card was there are some cards that tap for a lot of mana, and this lets you untap from the cost of 1 mana. And so for 1 mana, you can get more than 1 mana. So it allowed you to really get huge amounts of mana. But anyway, this card was a very powerful card. It was restricted long, long ago. But anyway, it was pretty cool. And Taunos, by the way, is the... Ashnod was the apprentice to Mishra. Taunos was the apprentice to Urza. And for those who don't know the story, Taunos and Ashnod had a thing for a while. Star-crossed lovers sort of thing. But anyway, guys, I can see my desk and I realize I passed my halfway point, or I passed the 30-minute mark. So I've made it halfway through. So anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. But since I can see my desk, we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So guys, I hope you enjoyed my my walk through Antiquities, but I'm not done. So come back next time and I will do the second half. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoy this as much as I enjoy revisiting Antiquities. One of my favorite, like I said, one of my first ever favorite sets. Probably my first favorite set of magic. Anyway, guys, I will see you next time. Bye-bye.